Ray Galloway is a construction manager and consultant, commercial and residential builder, and a certified inspector for all commercial and residential buildings. And now, here is About the House with Troy Galloway.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome back to About the House, your audio university on everything you could ever possibly want to know about your home. And we have so many great shows out here. What I want you to listen to, not just this show, but go back to our archives. And that's why I say about a university is because it's kind of like an audio library of all the different things that we've actually presented out there. And I believe that we're probably the only type of show that actually goes into this kind of different content that's everything. Well, it's about the house. And so it's everything about the house that you could ever want to know. I got a lot of people now that are following all over the country because they literally are learning just like, you know, a lot of folks are about the different products. And so much stuff's happening out here in the construction world anymore that it's really difficult to try to keep up with. Even with somebody like a construction nerd like me, it's hard to keep up. And that's why this you can get this on podcast or YouTube TV or follow us on any social media. Hey, we're all over Rumble now, so we're expanding quickly as far as our different formats. And after you listen to the show, I want you to, if you would please, hit like and subscribe to whatever format that you're listening to so you can get all the newest of us, not just the radio shows, but all our videos. You know, I mean, we got several hundred of them out there, and it is a lot of fun, a lot of education. We don't really ever try to advertise anything out here. We just is all about just education with fun. Hey, by the way, I should introduce myself. This is our little bit of advertising here. I am your humble host, Troy Galloway, owner of Galloway Building Services. Just like the radio show, we're very unique type of company also. Yes, we do building and construction inspections. We do residential and commercial building inspections. Commercial inspections, what does that mean? Well, if you've got a construction problem going on with your contractor, or if you're a contractor and you're having some trouble getting paid, or your customer's lost a little bit of faith in you for whatever reason, normally it's because a nosy neighbor sticking her nose in their business and don't have a clue what they're talking about. But hey, give us a call. We have helped a lot of people out. You know, actually, we help a lot of real estate agents too, because what happens is that when they're trying to do a transaction and they need to get some work done, well, sometimes that, you know, their buyer says, hey, this is not done right. Maybe the seller, of course, the seller is not going to spend any more money than they have to. So we could help you out there, tell you if it's done right, or make you a quick report, help save the deal. So that's a great idea, great way of taking care of things. And we don't just do that, but we also do expert witnessing in court, which is a lot of fun, too. You know, it's fun because it's very educational. It's really what I think is funny about. I'm snickering to myself. What's funny is I've literally watched the jury, and they're just all ears. Some of these folks, you can see, guys and gals, you know, they're sitting there. They want to learn about this, too. So it's a lot of fun, and we really help a lot of people out. But today's show is going to be about the exciting world of drywall. And you say, well, how in the world can that be exciting? Well, folks, it really has changed over the years. Drywall, from when it first started, which we're going to kind of go a little bit about that, to where it's at now. Heck, just in the 44 years that I've been in construction business, drywall has evolved into some really, really awesome products out there. But as we're going to go through here, we're going to talk about some of the pitfalls and some of the problems and where drywall can be applied and where it can't be. But drywall, actually, it was an invention in the 20th century. And now it's an essential part of all our residential and commercial constructions. But it was invented, you know, back, well, about 1910, I think, something like that, you know, right about that time. And how drywall evolved is that we always use plaster. And we all remember our old plaster walls and such. Well, plaster, heck, you know, I'd love to do a show just on plaster because it's a world of its own, and it's really evolved also. But plaster has been around since, well, for thousands of years, you know, way back. We even got some artifacts where Egyptians even used plaster. So, you know, it's been around for a long time, but it's very labor intensive. And so we really quit seeing so much of that. And most of our houses that we see here in the East, on the East Coast and throughout our Midwest, not so much in the Western states as they was, you know, a little bit later to be, you know, in the housing boom areas. But it really kind of disappeared, in the 40s, in the 50s, at 1940s, 1950. Oh, here's my note right here. Well, actually, so United States Jimson Company was founded in 1903. So I guess I was just a little bit off on my time here. And it was actually invented not as a replacement for plaster, but actually, believe it or not, and this is how things come around in full circle, it was called Pryobar, and it was sold in small tiles, and it was made for fireproofing. So ain't that pretty cool? Fireproofing. Now, we'll talk about that, says, because drywall is kind of wound a little bit. And now we do have some different specific products just for that. But it says that sheetrock, which is sheetrock is no more than just a name for the product. We call it drywall. We call it sheetrock. Some people call it plasterboard. Some people call it gypsum board. It's all the same thing. And so when it was invented, it was came out as the actual product of more of what we're using today in 1916 is what my notes are saying right here. So it's really great stuff. And used to actually be when it first was being used in our residential and commercial, well, more residential than commercial use, we put that in our walls as a replacement for wood laths. So we remember when we used to do our plaster, we'd put up one by little thin, what they call them, wood laths, and then they would plaster over that. And the wood laths would have like a quarter inch in between each slat, and then they'd go over it, and they would do like several coats. Well, it was labor intensive for one, having to put all the wood laths up. So what they did is that they just took this drywall, and then they used it in replacement of the wood laths. And that way that it was easier and quicker for the plasters to go right over top of it. But still, we had plaster over top of our drywall. And you're going to see a lot of that still. If you get into rehabbing or any of this stuff, you'll see a lot of that in our older buildings. Now, here's a little disclaimer that you don't see often. When you start getting into plaster, whether it be over drywall or before, plaster actually used to have a lot of asbestos in it, had lead in it, you know, even some of it even had formaldehyde in it, some other hazardous waste. So before you just start tearing your plaster walls down, especially if you have young children or pets or anything, you want to check to make sure, get it tested. And if you don't want to get it tested to see, just perform the proper way of disposing it and containing the area that you're doing the work in. That way you'll know that you're not going to have any problems. Because, you know, it's not a big deal, but it's a huge deal if anybody gets hurt. And nobody wants that. But, yeah, so we used to just actually put that right over our drywall, went right over our plaster. And then the plaster could go right over it, and he wouldn't even need as many coats of drywall or plaster to go over it. And that was really, really cool. Now, today, we don't use plaster over our drywall. Today, we are just using only drywall only. And on around our perimeters of it, actually the sides of it, not all four sides of the perimeter, there's actually a little, like indentation. It's kind of recessed. And the reason we do that is for our taping. So our taping joints will be our drywall mud and tape go right over that. And it fills in, so you got nice, beautiful, smooth walls. It really looks great. Just think about that. Also, you know, when we get into some of our drywall now, we got some really big, long sheets of drywall. So we even have now even less amount of space that we have to tape over our mud and tape. So it's really, really great. I guess back in 1949, the Housing Act we had a lot of our, it was after the war, World War II, and we had just went through a Great Depression, which we won't need to get into that. I think most folks understand what happened at that time. But then we had the war. Well, we had all these people come back, all our men and women coming back from the war. Well, we needed housing for them. We needed jobs for them. So we had a big housing boom. And part of that was actually because of the Housing Act in 1949. And, that's really whenever the houses started going, being built so fast, they really didn't have time to get hung up on plastering. So even though drywall was invented already before that time, we really just didn't see a lot of drywall at that, being used externally like it does now. But now it's industry standard. And since then, even in my time, we've watched drywall just literally just turn into some really, really cool things. Now, is plastering work dead? Well, not really. Actually, plasterers, there's not many old-time plaster tradesmen out there anymore. It's a high-skilled talent. It's time-consuming. It's hard to find somebody that's still good. And, and maybe we do got some young guys out there doing it, but I haven't seen any lately. Actually, the only fellas that I know out there are probably my age, and they do it. And then nobody's doing whole houses anymore, so they're doing more repair work. But let me tell you a real quick story about that, too, because that is – so years ago when I was getting my – I was going to get my building engineering degree. I met a fella who was getting his master's degree and the same thing as I was in my field was in. And he had a plaster company. And I asked him, I said, well, how come are you getting your master's degree still in engineering and you still have your plaster company? He said, Troy, he said, you're going to make a heck of a lot more money if you do then engineering, if you have a skill like plaster. He says the day of having anybody out here knowing how to do this, they're coming to the end. And so there's the lesson. Sometimes just a good blue collar job like that, a good high skill trade, that like Michael Rowe talks about with dirty jobs. He talks about, oh, by the way, he didn't pay me to throw his 2 cents worth in. but it's a, he's actually got promoting our skilled trades out there. We need to actually do another show on that. We did one a long time ago with Rankin Tech, but so you don't always have to go to school, get a good trade that also could help you. But, and especially in the dying arts, because we still got a lot of plaster going on. But now where we actually do a lot more of our plaster work today is more in our commercial and our industrial buildings where durability and moisture control are very important. And what we put a lot of times, we put it in our stairway building of our buildings. And that's a common area for plaster. Since they're built, they're called hardened areas, and they're built with cinder blocks or poured concrete walls. So what they'll do is to make that look pretty, make it look more like the balance of the building, then they'll plaster right over top of that and create a nice, beautiful, smooth walls. And also any place of their high moisture or other applications, as plaster really holds up better under them damp, moist conditions. And so put it in a hardened area. So when you go down your stairways of your, if you get into a commercial project or something, you'll see that that's absolutely something that's happening. And now you know why, right? So, all right. So let's move on down here. Let's talk about a little bit more about drywall. We don't want to get too much more into the plaster, but that's a world of its own and a lot of fun to learn about too. But today, in our drywall, they come in almost any size sheets that you want. So you can actually cover up some walls pretty quick. Now, I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail about installing drywall because you really, some of that really should be an audio, video type of thing so you can see and hear at the same time as you're explaining it. A lot of great YouTube videos out there on that. But, we got drywall sheets that are, 4 foot, some of them even more wider than 4 foot now. for tall walls, so you only have, so you don't have to have that split section in there. Where if you got a tall wall, instead of two sheets, it's, you know, where 4 foot, you have to have three sheets. Now they got them, so you could just do two sheets. But they go up to 16 feet long. Well, wow, you can cover a lot of wall space pretty quick. And here you go, folks. The less drywall joints you have, the less areas you're going to have for imperfections, you might say, where you can see it humping out, or and a lot less work. You know what I mean by humping out is if you look down your wall, that's a good trick here too. I'm going to tell you about that in a second here. So when you're looking down your wall, you don't see it kind of bowing out or bowing in as much. You're going to get a little bit of irregularities because your studs are not always perfectly straight. But whenever, here you go. So whenever anybody does hang any drywall before they put the primer on it, then just take your big light, look down the sides of the wall, look down and see what, if you see any bumps or see any kind of nails coming loose or anything, you know, and we'll talk more about that at the end of this show, but that definitely will help. Now, primer, when you throw the primer on your drywall, oh, if you got sins, it's going to show it, and it's going to show it quickly. Problem is, you can't really sand that drywall mud off of it after it's been primered. So let's try to jump out ahead about that. Well, so we're going to talk about the different types of drywall out there, because like I was saying earlier, there's all kinds of drywall out there that we have today. And we have our regular drywall, or some people call it whiteboard. And that's what we use on the all our interior type work. They have actually a smooth board, which is a little bit more expensive than your regular drywall board, because some people, like, we really love our smooth ceilings. And so on ceilings, we talk about that. You see the old sand finishes and the swirl finishes on ceilings. Well, the reason that we did that as builders is because drywall, the taping and finishing on a ceiling is a lot more labor intensive. So we could get a cheaper price if we put a little texture on our ceiling, because it was less work for the drywall tapers. But we really kind of is getting away from that, because it was a nightmare. As you all know, the popcorn ceilings and that stuff, what a sand finish nightmare is trying to patch anything that on your ceilings. So we went with the smooth board. Smooth board really looks good. A lot of times we'll just put that smooth board just on our ceilings and not our walls. But sometimes we also do it on the walls too, depending on what kind of texture that you're looking for. And it comes anywhere, you know, from 3/8 of an inch to 5/8 of an inch. And, you know, and it comes in all different sizes of boards up to, like I said, 16 feet. Now you're going to say, well, Troy, I've seen a heck of a lot of other drywall out there, and I see all kinds of weird colors. What does that mean? Well, the colors actually kind of helps the builder, the inspector, and everybody else kind of know that the color isn't as important as designating the type of drywall. So we got a green board drywall. It's also known as a moisture resistant, get that now, not moisture retardant, moisture resistant drywall, and has a green covering on it. And they claim that that green actually helps keep it. That's what makes it more moisture retardant, but not really. You know, it's more just an identification. And it is a little bit more expensive than your regular drywall. But as we go down through here and some of these other boards that you're going to find, they definitely cost a little bit more. So we don't want to just stick it all over the house. But we usually use that, you know, the green drywall. We usually use tile backer. We got all kinds of different cement board backers and such. But this is a more economical way to do it. And it really does work good. We use it in bathrooms, basement walls, right? Basement walls where we're drywalling because of any kind of moisture. Around kitchens, laundry rooms, utility rooms, etc. Now, we also have blue board drywall. It's also known as plaster baseboard. Blue board is used for a veneer plastering. So yes, we still do that. We still put that on top of our board studs and then plaster over it because we like to have that plaster texture. And that special blue board, because of the moisture coming up in it, it literally will help you hold that dry the plaster on better instead of getting in plaster pops where it starts cracking and such coming off. And that's, we'll talk about that again, like I said, in another show when we get into plaster. But it's definitely, it's high water and mold resistance, good things. And there are fewer steps involved when you use veneer plastering. And blue board is not made. Now remember this, it's not made for mud, tape, or paint. It's made for applying for plaster over it. There's other applications too, but we'll get into that. There's only so much we could get into this one, cram all this information in one show. So, but it works extremely well in bathrooms or places where a whole lot of moisture. But you know what else is cool about the blue board? It also is a moisture, it helps reduce sound. So that's something to think about, especially when you start stacking up your drywall. Sometimes we'll put different layers of drywall, and we'll talk about that too. But we'll put that in there. Now, underneath that drywall, and then we maybe put another soundboard on top of that of a drywall, and that helps deaden the sound. And we're going to do a whole show just on soundproofing here. Maybe we'll do that here sometime in coming up in the next month or so, because that's a really great subject and really advancing quickly. But, here you go. Paperless drywall. You say, what? Well, how's drywall even made? Well, drywall is a gypsum type of material that's sandwiched in between two pieces of paper. And so paperless drywall, it's been replacing now paper drywall because paper actually has a problem. Well, it has a problem with mold. You know, it's the paper that molds. Termites love it. Actually, that's a good little trick to look for your termites if you want to see. You'll see little black specks in your where they literally the termites have been eating through and you know leaving their feces behind, staining your drywall. So they love that paper. And so, but this type of drywall is covered now. This is with fiberglass instead of paper. Is that cool? Fiberglass. I told you guys, folks, that this drywall has come a long ways, and it protects the gypsum board from rot, and it even has a higher resistance to mold and mildew. And, you know, the quality of the board is a little tougher than the regular drywall, but I'm hearing from a lot of the construction pros out there, they find it easier to cut. So that's a plus. Now, I don't know that it's really regular drywall is difficult to cut, especially if you watch these guys that are knowing how to do it. That's fun to watch them. They score one side, bend it down, snap it. Them boys are a breeze. They're just a ball to watch when they're rock and rolling and putting in this drywall. But paperless drywall has some slight textures that does require some applying joint compound to achieve a smooth, clean finish, drywall finish. But paperless. And now be heads up on that one, because that's a product that definitely is going to continue evolving in the industry for a lot further because it's got so many great opportunities to advance. Now we're seeing a lot of more of this is purple drywall. Yeah, purple. It looks like a dadgum rainbow in some of these houses with all the different colors of drywall that you got. Sometimes you feel like, well, maybe I shouldn't even paint this stuff. Yet you got to paint it because you're a drywall mud. But you really do need to, you know, all the different colors. It makes it pretty bright in your house. But purple drywall, it offers the same advantages as regular drywall, okay? But it has a superior moisture and mold resistant characteristics to it. And it can be used with all walls and ceiling applications. And you'll see a lot of this in bathrooms and is ideally suited for enhanced moisture and mold resistance where desired, like in your bathrooms, where you might be able to get, where you have some of these issues. Now, green board was more something we used. We're seeing more purple out here now. If it's going to be in contact with water, I highly recommend that you use purple drywall, the purple color in drywall. Now, like we talked about the other, it's great for being a backer board or things like that, but just the purple drywall, isn't that something? Now, here's the one a lot of us talk about out here, is that we call it Type X drywall, and it's a fire resistant. Now, remember earlier in the show, we talked about that, where how at the beginning, drywall was first used and invented for fire resistant. But now it's come so much further. And a lot of our codes throughout the United States is that we use 5/8 thick drywall, type X. And how do you know? How do you know if it's type X? Well, it will say right on the drywall because it looks like regular white drywall. You can't really see the difference. To the untrained eye, you cannot see the difference between the two. So look for the stamp, and it'll say fire resistance, type X, and it'll give you whatever kind of information that you need on that. And we use a lot of times in our different areas that we use fireproofing, like garages. Now, we call a firewall. A firewall is the wall between your house and your garage, where the living area is adjoining the garage section. And code says that we are to have that fireproofed. Now, some municipalities actually will call for 2 layers of 5/8 drywall. So as that, it really will contain that fire so much longer. We talked that and you want to learn more about fireproofing, that kind of stuff, go check out about our doors. We talk about fire rating doors and such on another show that we've done in the past. But, another thing about it I like about this Type X drywall is it actually can help you with the soundproofing. Now, soundproofing, we don't have the loud cars like we used to. Oh, I just love them old muscle cars back in my day. But we had, we got these little bumblebees that make a lot of noise in the garage and such. And guys out there working in the garage sheds or in the garage, and with the radios on and such. Yeah. And sometimes they make the garages man caves. That soundproofing, it does make a little sense when them applications. But think about that. And to receive the Type X designation, the gypsum board must, or the drywall must, achieve at least a 1 hour fire resistance for every 5/8 of an inch a layer. So if I got a double layer, they're telling me that car could catch a fire, or your lawnmower, the gasoline, whatever's in your garage could catch a fire, and you got 2 hours of resistance time. So by that time, you should be plenty of time to get out. Your alarms and everything should be working. Really is a great stuff. And it's nailed right on load-bearing stud walls. So these are great places that we want to be able to use it. Now, we're seeing a lot of this. We kind of alluded to this shortly before. And that's soundproofing drywall. Really, ain't that really? That's awesome. And where we see a lot of the soundproofing. Soundproofing can be used, if we have condos and I got apartments and you see them using hotels, motels, where we don't want the neighbors to be making, hearing our neighbors or anything. Then if you add another layer or two of this different types of board on top of that, that even enhances it even more of your soundproofing. Now, here's something that we still use. But not as often as much as we used to. We have a sound channel, and it's what we do is a sound channel goes on before our drywall goes on, and it's kind of a V shape, a type of metal material. Well, it isn't kind of a V shape; it is a V shape, and one side gets screwed to the floor joist, floor joist of his apartment, ceiling rafters, your walls, etc., and then the other side just drywall gets nailed right to it. Why that's important is because that gives you that little, you don't have that contact all the way through where that sound travels. Now, like I say, we're going to talk about that in other shows and probably maybe even do some videos on that because it's really that cool. Soundproofing is getting more and more in demand, for kids' bedrooms, things like that. People loving their music, countless things. So, now, this drywall, soundproofing drywall, it's a lot denser than regular drywall. So, It is. It's a little harder to cut than other types of drywall, but you know, any area that you need to have that, you can actually put this in. And listen to the others, you know, add some of the other drywall over top of it. It's not fireproof, but if you wanted to have a little bit of, you know, if you put that behind your Type X of your garage and then you apply that to it, you really got a good sound barrier. You know, a lot of people are now doing podcasts right there in their homes. A lot of people are recording, you know, have a home recording studios. Perfect. Perfect. Oh, now, I don't know. I've been complained about in the past where they said, you said this was soundproof drywall, Troy, and I can still hear my son playing them dadgum drums down in the basement. Well, I don't know what to tell you about that. You know, I just hope that he gets a little better or at playing the drums, or maybe you could put a little something, sponges or something on the end of his drumsticks. I don't know. But you got that would help a lot. To help keep that sound from going in. And there's a lot of other neat things that you could do. And like I say, we'll do a show just on that here in the future, that with the different types of drywall. So nowadays, drywall insulation is pretty easy. And but I do highly recommend, if you're not a handyman kind of a person, that you really do want to get a professional to hang it and finish it. Hanging it is as, ask any taper. Drywall taper. Hanging it is the first secret in getting a proper finish. If I can get a company that will hang and tape, that's your best bet. But what we have are two different trade unions out there, at least in the Midwest, where the two different trades unions come in, so they won't do both work. And so if that's the case, and if your hangers are not the same company as your tapers, good tip, I want you to go get your taper before you pay that hanger a dime. Have the taper come through there and look at it. Make sure that it's been all hung properly so his job is not a nightmare. But here's another one. Before you actually start hanging it, I want you to have your hanger to come through there to make sure that all of the framing material is right. What do I mean framing material right? You want to make sure you got the right backers, you got the right corners, you got the right, you're not missing pieces of lumber so that the hanger has something to attach on that's at his material on that's secure. Because if not, and that stuff's hanging, well, you're going to get a poor installation, you're going to get a poor finish, and it just goes downhill. So, proper pecking order. Framer's done. Before the framer gets paid, you have your taper come through. I recommend you get your drywall hanger to come through to look at the framing before you run the mechanicals, your electrical, your plumbing, your HVAC, etc. That way, if they have to do any cutting or anything, they can go right in there. Now, that's, you know, you're going to ask them to do it, but when you ask your hanger to do it, he'll understand why, because he's going to want to do a great job too. And he's also not going to want to have to fight, you know, fight it out. He's not going to want to add anything. Then, when your hanger's done, you have your taper come through before you pay the hanger and make sure that it's all hung properly without having any kind of major problems. So them are really great tips that'll save you. This is some of the reasons we get called in our construction inspections or doing expert witnessing and construction work is because of this kind of poor quality, what's going on. Now, some of the other things now when we hang on our drywall, we also like to glue our drywall to our studs and to our ceilings. And you would just put it right to you. It comes in a quart caulking gun, and we just apply this adhesive right to our studs, our floor joist, our ceiling rafters, depending on if you're in the upper or lower end of the apartment building or two-story. But so you hang that. Then we use nails only around the perimeter. And then we take our screws, we screw off the field. That's the insides of it. Now, why we do that? Well, drywall screws don't back out as easily and get the nail pops. Them, you know, them nasty little bumps that look like it's protruding out of the side of your drywall. We don't get near as much of that with screws. But hey, screws do back out. Don't, that's a BS story where they say they don't, because we've all seen it countless times where the screws will back out on you. But the nails will do it more than the screws do. But we put them around the perimeter. But why? Well, for one, it's easier for me to take that nail and then tack that up and help hold that sheet up until I can get back and screw it the center of the field off. But also, by putting our screw or our nails around the perimeter, then we're putting our drywall mud and tape over top of that. So it's not allowing them nails to back out. So you're giving yourself a little bit of extra protection. You will see drywall pops, nail pops, we call them, even from screws and everything, because when our material dries out, our home dries, our materials dry, everything shrinks. Well, except for the fasteners, they don't. So here's a little tip. When you have to go back and repair them, I want you not to take your nail out or your screw out. Take your hammer. Just tap that into it. Just make and put a lid. Don't break the paper. Never break the paper when you're hanging your drywall with screws or nails. And you just, but when you're repairing it, you just tap that in. You leave a little divot in there, a little bit of a dent where your hammer put a little bit of dent to set that in there. That way, when you do skim coat back over the mud or whatever sealant that you're using to go over top of that nail pop, that gives it something to fasten onto and hang on to. It's real simple, but don't break your paper. You break the paper, you've lost your integrity. It does not, it doesn't hold anything. Plus, it also allows a lot more other problems to go along with it. Now, it usually takes, usually takes a good drywall taper, a couple of coats to go through the house. You got your bed coat, and then you got your finish coat. But for a lot of us, I say, honestly, we're probably doing 3 to 4 coats. And when you're doing your drywall taping, if you're doing it yourself, it's better to do 3 coats than sand a bunch. Now, that's the glory of drywall mud, is that you can sand it off. So if you make a mistake or you get too much of a hump in it or build up too much, you can sand it off. But my stars, that dust goes everywhere. It gets down in your furnace. It gets inside your ductwork, makes people sick, you know, people with allergies. So you want to keep that as dustless as possible. So just try to, you know, try to skim coat it. If you have to, like I say, if you have to skim coat it 2 or 3 times, just your dry over your nails and over your drywall joints. Don't need anything in the field anymore. It's not plaster. It's drywall. That's the glory of it. Now you'll say, well, that's not what I see in my garages. That's right. In our garage, it's a little different. So in our garages, we call it fire taping. The only reason we even tape that is to stop that air bear, you know, get to cut down any kind of air gaps that can actually help let the fire through. So all that is all we're really doing is just retarding the fire from passing through it. So that's where we actually put our beginner drywallers out there. Tapers is out in the garage, and that's where they learn how to bed coat and everything and take care of it. And that's why you see in your garages, you don't see a fancy finished job. It's about fire retardant, fire resistant. It's not about pretty. If you want to pay the extra, the guys will be tickled to do it, but it does cost extra to have that done. Then what we actually do, if you're trying to learn how to do this yourself, then we kind of, so, or if you want to do part of your own job yourself, then you can go into your closets. And why we do that, then, so the guys, when they get good enough at taping out in the garages, then they go into the closets and we let them do that. Why? Well, we don't have as, you know, the lighting's not going to show you the senses of the poor taping job, you know, so it doesn't have to be as perfect. The lighting's not so good, the shadowing and everything. So if you want to do it yourself, that's a great way you can help save yourself some money. It's a great way that you can have an opportunity to learn. And if you are a fellow that's starting your own construction company, this is a great way for you to get your people to do it also. All right. So then, if we get too much mud, once again, what we do is that we'll just go right there and just have to sand it down. Now, we do have some instant muds out there that's 20-minute, 30-minute, 45, 60-minute mud. Usually comes dry. You mix it up with water. That's very, very hard drywall mud. Some of that you do not want to have to sand because it is tough. Now, there's applications for that. that we do recommend, especially my tapers. They like to, if they're actually button up against a plaster wall, they'll use that kind of material. So as it transitions over to that, so that's a great spot for it. Or, you know, if you're really good at it, you know, and you want to do your nail pops, that's a great place to also do it. But like I said, you don't want to have to do any more sanding on that as possible. If you're a good drywall taper, you honestly don't do a whole lot of sanding. You know, you really don't see a whole lot of drywall dust in your house because they don't want to hit heck fire. They don't want to have to do it either, you know. They don't want to have to. They want to just rock and roll and tape and get out of there. Nobody likes to sand. Oh, that's some of the areas that we also do it. Oh, here's a good tip now. Sometimes we get a rupture in our drywall. And what do I mean by that? Say I got a nail that's not quite set, you know, in my stud wall, and I put that drywall up and it breaks it in my drywall in the field or anywhere. Hey, you know, or if something happens to it that it just ruptures it and it's no longer smooth. Don't try. Folks, I've done this years ago. I tried, and all I did is just embarrass myself. And I always kind of thought that I was a pretty handy little taper. And you just can't get that rupture out of it. It looks like crap from then till forever. And it don't get any better. So, secret, what we do is we just cut that out, get that loose stuff out of there, and put in a good heavy compound. And if you're a good taper, then you could go over top of that. With whatever tape or mud or whatever, you know, that a good taper could do, they could do miracles. These guys are just, they are definitely a high skilled quality tradesmen out there. So that's a great spot. Now, drywall mud, we have different types. We already talked about the instant. Then we have our regular compound, and regular compound is always used. At least I love to see it only used on our mud, our bed coats, because it is harder. Then we have a lightweight mud. Lightweight mud, or a topping type mud, it's your finish coat. It's easy to sand the light coat, and it goes over top of your bed coat. But it's light. It's not as durable. So you really want to make sure that you get that other taken care of. Now, I do want to make sure that you take care of it properly, I guess I should say. So I had a couple questions as I was presenting this, talking about doing this show. And so one of the things that we talked about is the Chinese, they wanted me to bring up was the Chinese drywall. Now, we really don't see much of this as much as we used to. But the Chinese drywall that it definitely come from China. And it was horrible. It was a hazardous waste. It puts out a heavy sulfur smell like rotten eggs. And it had health issues. If you had asthma or coughing, it caused headaches, sore throats. There's nothing you could do about it. The only that I know of, I could be wrong. And hey, if any of you folks out there know of a better solution than I'm getting ready to present, please contact me at GallowayBuildingServices.com. I would love to get more ideas on how to take care of it, because the only thing we know to do is you have to rip that crap out of your house and throw it away. Literally rip it out and throw it away. It's just that horrible. Now, we also do, which I didn't really touch on too much, is an exterior drywall. Now, where we use exterior drywall we've used it on sheathing, where you put right before you, on the outside of your house, exterior. We also put on top of that, then our siding goes over top of that. And we also use it on porch ceilings a lot. Not as often as we used to, either one. We used to use a lot of drywall, exterior drywall, for our porch ceilings back when I was framing in the 80s and the early 90s. I don't see as much of it as we used to. And the reason we don't is because even though the drywall was kind of weather resistant, the taping would get wet, you know, damp, and it would fall. And, you know, it just looked like it didn't look real good. And, you know, it was somewhat cheap is why we did it. And it was quick. But it really wasn't the best. Now, here, I've been involved in this too many times. And when I see it now, when I do a home inspection, I just call it, you got a problem. And that is when we use it for our sheathing. We saw a lot of that during the 90s and in the early 2000s. And actually, we saw it more on our inner city buildings, condos, apartments, because it was cheap. And the guys, the builders were trying just to put these things up as cheap as possible. Folks, them things are just, if you see, you see exterior drywall, don't buy that building. Don't buy that building because you got a problem. You got mold issues that happen. It's just not designed for that. Now, we do got some other, we're going to start seeing more and more of this coming back. Drywall now, because I'm going to talk about the older buildings. The newer buildings, the reason that I think we could get away with more of it is we do have a better, higher moisture resistant drywall material that would work well for that, as long, especially if you cover your seams for that. That help you, for moisture air going through. That other stuff, you're just looking for a lawsuit. That's all. If you're a builder, you're looking for a lawsuit. If you're a buyer, owner of a property, you're just looking for a total sheathing replacement. We're talking big money. So these are some of the, I've kind of shared with you as much as I could in a short period of time, a little bit about the pros, the cons, the different types of materials out there. There's a whole bunch more to this than what I have just mentioned. And I'm hoping that we can get some drywallers to come on the show here and probably come this winter when things slow down a little bit, we can have some come in, because I want to talk to you about the different applications and way that people do things. And, they're going to give you some trade secrets, but right now you got some great product ideas and you got some good starting points where you can use it, what types you have. So I hope this has really been beneficial to you. I know I really greatly enjoyed sharing this show with you today. And if you folks ever have any questions whatsoever, please, please feel free to give me a call. My office number is 636-394-3112. Or you can call me on my personal cell phone. I don't give this out very often. I don't give it out on very many shows, but I think this is important enough. And that's 314-520-6655. And of course, you could always touch base with us on our webpage at GallowayBuildingServices.com. You can catch us out on Facebook or, like I said, Rumble and our social media, YouTube channels. And just ask the questions. I'd love to help you. If you have a drywall situation from a poor installation, or you're having some of these problems that we've been talking about already, give me a call. I'd love to help you in any way possible. Well, folks, I am signing out of this show. I thank you so much. I want to give a shout out to our producer, Joey. I don't always pat him on the back, but he's a wonderful young man. Any of you folks in the St. Louis or Midwest area that's looking for a good producer for your shows, he doesn't just podcasts, but he does all kinds of, he's the one that flies the drones on some of our, you see some of our YouTube videos about what to expect from in home inspection and these things. Great guy, great contact. Just contact me. He doesn't want me to give you his phone number right now because, well, he's just shy. Anyway, folks, thank you, Joey. Thank you, everybody. God bless you for watching, listening to our show. And give us a holler. Love to help you. Galloway Building Services, your humble host, has brought you this show about the house.
Sponsored by Troy Galloway and Galloway Building Services, your top choice for professional home inspections in the St. Louis area. GallowayBuildingServices.com.